This is a recording of the open meeting of the Federal Election Commission scheduled for May 25, 2006. Should you have questions after listening to this recording, please call the FEC at 1-800-424-9530 or email us at info@fec.gov.
Good morning. The Special Federal Election Commission open meeting for Thursday, May 25, 2006 will come to order. And we have one item of business this morning, and that's Draft Advisory Opinion 2006-19, a request brought by the Los Angeles County Democratic Party Central Committee. And before we get into the details, just wanted to note that this is an advisory opinion that was handled and is being handled on the FEC's expedited track that's been put together in the last couple of months. As we've indicated in our earlier discussions, we've decided to move some advisory opinions that are time-sensitive on this track. I mean, under the statute, this opinion would have to be rendered within 60 days, which would have been well after the June 6th election in California, and therefore, although may have been academically interesting, probably would not have been as practically interesting for the requesters. So we're definitely seeking to identify a category of advisory opinions that are time-sensitive and get answers to people on a timely basis so that they can organize their affairs accordingly. But the other thing that I wanted to emphasize is that occasionally there's going to be some of these types of expedited advisory opinions that raise significant issues, important legal issues. And I think all of my colleagues are committed to, in that circumstance, having an open meeting, so having a chance to fully assess all the comments we receive and fully analyze the issues involved. And we don't view that as a trade-off in any respect. We can do both. We can answer an opinion on a timely basis and fully engage on all the substantive issues, and that's what we're seeking to do this morning with the advisory opinion before us. So we have advisory opinion 2006-19 from the Los Angeles County Democratic Party, from the council's office on this matter, Mr. Robert Knopp and Ms. Mai Din. Mr. Knopp, good morning.
Okay. Good morning. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We have an advisory opinion request from the Los Angeles County Democratic Party. The LA County Democratic Party is a local party committee that is planning to send certain communications to registered Democrats in the city of Long Beach between 4 and 15 days prior to that city's June 6th municipal election. In addition to being the date of the municipal election, June 6th is also the date of a federal primary election in California. The party plans to contact Long Beach Democrats through pre-recorded telephone messages and mailers to inform those voters about which candidates have received the party's endorsement. Both the phone messages and the mailers would also inform the voters of the date of the election. The party has asked whether its planned communications are federal election activities that must be paid for entirely with federally permissible funds. The draft before you concludes that they are. Specifically, the draft concludes that the planned communications meet the definition of get-out-the-vote activities that are considered federal election activities under the Act and Commission regulations. This conclusion is based on the fact that the communications will occur during the relevant FEA timeframe. They will involve contacting registered voters by telephone or other individualized means, and they will include information regarding the date of the election. In addition, the draft concludes that the communications are not exempt from the definition of FEA because a federal election will be held on the same date as the Long Beach municipal election. Thank you, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I should also note that this was a late submitted document.
Well, let's take care of that.
Okay.
Mr. Vice Chairman.
Yes, I'd like to move for a suspension of the rules to consider agenda document 06-40.
Vice Chairman, so moved. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Motion carries by a vote of 6-0. Mr. Knott.
Okay. That's all then.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you. Discussion of the issues before us. I'll offer a couple comments then at the outset. I think this is a case of first impression in terms of some key issues arising under our get-out-the-vote regulations within the federal election activity area. It's interesting obviously a large number of issues were litigated in terms of the soft money regulations the commission issued, but one important element wasn't, and that is what constitutes individualized means in terms of the GOTV regulation at 100.24. And I think we always contemplated when we established that requirement that there would be an occasion when we would flesh out what it means in practical application. What type of media are covered by that? What type of activities are going to be individualized means and therefore potentially GOTV? And what type of activities are not? And yet we didn't have an occasion to do that over the last 4 years. And it wasn't litigated as part of the Shays proceedings. So in some sense, I think that today's advisory opinion is our a chance for us to flesh out what that element of our regulations encompasses. And I think a very strong argument can be made that the media that are being used by the L.A. County party here, namely direct mail pieces as well as these robocalls or electronic telephone calls, which I understand they can call thousands of phones, and you might pick up the phone, but you really can't say anything in response. Or you can, but no one will hear you. But they will certainly have a script that you will hear on your telephone if you're the unlucky soul who picks up some of these calls. But I think a strong argument can be made that those types of communications do not meet the individualized means element of our regulations. I say that for a couple of reasons. First, the agency has historically made clear that merely encouraging people to vote or merely encouraging political activity does not meet the GOTV element, but rather there has to be concrete assistance provided to people to vote, and that was litigated in the Shays proceedings. But the commission recently reaffirmed that element in the revised GOTV regulations we did this year. And in some respects, I think the individualized means element works hand in hand with this assist element, and it's an emphasis, as the ENJ indicates, on concrete assistance, to be redundant, rather than broader political appeals that are more of a commonplace with respect to state and local parties. And I think that when you talk about mass appeals, whether it be television, radio, direct mail pieces that may go to thousands of people, robocalls, things of that nature, you don't have the one-on-one personal contact that is the hallmark of GOTV. You don't have door-to-door activities. You don't have telephone banks where people are calling and saying, hey, I'm calling you personally, and there's an election, June 6th, and I certainly hope you get out and vote, and do you need assistance to get to the polls, et cetera. That kind of personalized, concrete communication, which I think the commission viewed as the heart of what Congress was seeking to capture in the GOTV area, is not evident here, is not at issue here when you're talking about direct mail pieces that may go to tens of thousands of people and electronic telephone calls that are done in a standardized nature. So I think that it is a case of first impression in terms of what this individualized means element entails, but I do think a strong argument can be advanced that the media that are being used here, the methods of communication being used here, do not satisfy it, and therefore the activities that the requester is interested in doing are not GOTV activities and can be paid for 100% non-federal under our regulation that makes clear that when there's an exception from the FEA rubric and communication concerns non-federal candidates, it can be paid for 100% non-federal. So that's my take on some of the issues, but discussion of what we have before us today. Commissioner Walther.
Sure. Since I perceive that I'm the only one who's not inclined to support the decision that's going to be voted on today, I think it's probably appropriate to give my reasons at this point. It's true that we have not had a chance to really decide amongst ourselves what individualized means. But if we... I'm concerned that without more, what we decide today is what individualized... we don't decide what individualized really means. It's just we decide what individualized does not mean. And if it doesn't mean this, then what would it mean? Would it mean you have to personally talk to someone? So then the mailer should not be included. Does it mean that you have to have the ability to respond? Well, if so, the mailers wouldn't be included. What about when you give out handbills on the street? Is that individualized? Probably not, because you hand them to anyone. But yet that's somebody you can talk to them, but could be kids, could be people that don't vote, could be visitors. So I think it needs refinement. I'm reluctant to go so far today without more deliberation on how you might define individualized. To me, the two factors that are appropriate for consideration are selection, how the people are selected for which communication is to be sent, and secondly, what's the means to use to reach them. In this case, there is a purposeful selection to contact registered voters who are Democrats, and to do so not by the broadcast methods, but simply by direct mailers to their home. Granted, there's no direct communication with them. They can ignore it. They don't have to open up the, you know, open up the envelope or unstaple it. And they make a call directly to your home. To me, that's sufficiently individualized under the circumstances to find that it should be included within that category. And if not, like I say, what would it be? In that respect, I think it should be included. I am concerned about the fact that the FEC in previous litigation, in a brief, apparently mentioned that in this particular case, it would not be appropriate to include this if there were just the date, for example. But I feel that in that brief, and it was mentioned by a couple of commenters who really have tracked this issue, by counsel in litigation before McConnell was decided, and we since have got a regulation that carves out a situation where, by example, if you use the time of the polling, the place of the polling, and the date of the polling, the question arises is, then that certainly would be GOTV. If here only one of those factors is included, is that enough? Considered collectively with the issue of how the people are selected, how the people are contacted, and the fact that a date is indicated, to me, most people who are registered Democrats, if they want to be really get out the vote, at this point in the election, and timing is important, all they need is a reminder. Put it in their BlackBerry, put it in their calendar, make sure you know, get yourself booked so you can get the vote out. I don't think it's inconsistent with anything the Supreme Court has said. And I would just say that, for example, in the McConnell case, they were very concerned about methods of circumvention. In this particular case, there may be no intent to circumvene, but it's still, whether intent is there or not, it certainly can be have an influencing effect on who turns out, thereby influence a federal election. So in the court, it said common sense dictates, and it was undisputed below, that a party's efforts to register voters sympathetic to that party directly assist the party's candidates for federal office. It is equally clear that federal candidates reap substantial rewards from any effort that increase the number of like-minded registered voters who actually go to the polls. So the practical effect, regardless of the intent, when you send out a notice like this, is to give reminders to like-minded people to go to the polls where there's a federal election taking place. And then the court continued, because voter registration, voter identification, GOTV, and generic campaign activity all confer substantial benefits on federal candidates, the funding of such activities creates a significant risk of actual and apparent corruption. This is the court's language. It then pointed out that that the prohibition on state party soft money expenditures for federal election activity to be a reasonable response to that risk. So I think today, if we do what I believe my colleagues are going to do to vote, puts us in a more murky situation, more likely to result in the kind of thing the court was concerned about and not really consistent with the regulations we've adopted.
Thank you, Commissioner Walther. Discussion? Vice Chairman Lenhart.
I guess I sort of, as I approach this problem, the question that that was foremost in my mind is, what am I looking at here? Of these two types of communications, both the phone banks and the mail, what are these communications? As I look at our regulatory regime, they could potentially fit into one of several different categories. The one is that they could be GOTV communications. And we have a regulatory description of what that means. In the alternative, these could be communications that are public communications that are seeking to elect a state or local candidate, and then the question largely would turn on whether they also promoted, attacked, supported, opposed a federal candidate at the same time, in which case they would fall within our regulatory regime. And to my eye, these communications more comfortably fit into the category of communications whose purpose is to influence state and local elections, and more specifically to elect Bob Foster as mayor of Long Beach. In reaching that conclusion, I've looked through both the content of the communication, almost exclusively talks about Bob Foster and why he should be elected. It's targeted broadly to all Democrats that are eligible to vote in the election. It's timed over a broad number of days, and not specifically targeted to the period right immediately preceding the election. And the methods used, involve both mass mail and robocalls, and strike me as all of those things, sort of looking at them together, lead me to conclude that this is more aptly described as a candidate persuasion piece than a GOTV effort. The thing that makes this a somewhat more difficult question there are two factors, one or two facts, I guess, better. One is that the material includes the date of the election, and in our description of what constitutes GOTV activity, we give an example. And in that example, we describe a communication that would give the date of the election, the location of your particular polling place, and the hours in which that polling place was open. And so we could draw from that the communications that include the date of the election meet our definition of GOTV in the sense that they assist people in engaging in the act of voting. The second fact, which occurs, which appears only in the literature and does not appear in the calls, is that the literature gives the website of the county registrar of voters, and it informs people that if they go to the registrar's website if you click through the appropriate boxes on the website, you can and insert your address. You can the county will tell you where your polling place is. And so the question, presents itself more narrowly, whether the inclusion of this information converts this from a candidate persuasion piece, from a public communication that Paso's a state candidate, into GOTV activity. And my sense is that it doesn't. That the fact that they've included the date of the election in and of itself does not make this GOTV activity. But I reached that conclusion in part looking at the whole. I probably would have a far different view of this if the communication's content was different. I think looking at this communication, my sense is they could drop the date of the communication. It wouldn't change its impact at all. I mean, my sense is looking at the phone script, looking at the literature, the purpose is to convince the reader to vote for Bob Foster, and that the date, the inclusion of the date of the election is a common feature to political literature and was not reflective that at its core this activity was GOTV activity. That's my sense of this. I mean, I look at the totality of the circumstances. I look at the content, targeting, timing, the methods of communications. And as I looked back at the E&J was put out at the time these regulations were adopted to try and get as clear a sense as I could as to what the Commission was trying to achieve when it defined GOTV as activity that was to assist the engaging in the act of voting. I note that they tried to distinguish sort of traditional campaign activity from activity that was targeted to facilitating or assisting people in the actual act of voting.
Thank you, Mr. Vice Chairman. Further discussion? Commissioner Walther. Commissioner Mason.
Thank you. First of all, I agree that this is a close call, and it makes it an interesting one. I agree with the Vice Chairman ultimately that this particular communication is not GOTV, and I agree with him on some of the factors he laid out, and I actually agree with Commissioner Walther on some of the factors laid out. I know a lot of the commenters would love some guidance that they could take back and easily communicate, and I'm already regretting the perhaps necessity to drop the 72-hour guideline. And I strongly suspect, by the way, that the people who submitted and shaped this request were probably unaware that we had recently deleted the 72-hour guideline, because otherwise it's just a remarkable coincidence that all this activity stops 3 days before the election. So, and it would be great, I know, for the attorneys involved to be able to tell their clients, well, if it's 3 days before, you're okay, but we couldn't do that, or a week before, or if you just say this, you're okay, or if you don't say that, you're okay. And I think, unfortunately, the answer is that probably you're not going to have a single template like that that absolutely ropes things in or definitively puts them out. That's not to say, however, that I think in having talked to some of my colleagues in preparing this and listening already to what's been said, that we couldn't come up with some at least useful elements or pieces of guidance that would be generally reliable. First, I want to comment on how I look at it, and it's in a way similar to the Vice Chairman, but it has to do with the interpretation of the statute, and that is that we are not interpreting the phrase get out the vote effort in isolation. First, by logic and in the statute, get out the vote is closely related to voter identification. And so in my view, communications that follow on voter identification are very much more likely to be get out the vote. That is to say, if the party has had a door-to-door effort or a phone bank and has identified voters who are likely to vote for Bob Foster or whoever the candidates may be in a particular election, and then close to the election they call to remind them, first of all, that starts to be individualized because they're communicating with particular people, not with a mass mailing list. But second, in the context, it's related. But when we look at what Congress defined as federal election activity and thus needed to be regulated under the FECA, there are some things that they specifically defined out. And it's very clear that advocacy for non-federal candidates is not federal election activity. And while it's not the same subsection, it's the same definition, the same regulatory construct of federal election activity. And so one bound, in my mind, on how broadly we define get-out-the-vote efforts is that we cannot define get-out-the-vote so broadly as to encompass advocacy for non-federal candidates. It's simply a straightforward aid in interpretation, and so in that sense, I think it's very relevant in looking at the content, as the Vice Chairman has suggested, and I think it is not impermissibly narrowing the statute. I think it's precisely following the statute to bring that sort of consideration into play. The factors that I think are important in interpretation, first, I think the Vice Chairman brought up the conjunctive nature of our example, and that is just an example. It's not the whole of the regulation. But I do think it's important, and I'm certainly willing to say, and I suspect the consensus of the commission would be, that the date alone is not enough. And the example says date, location, and hours. And clearly, if you had all three of those, it would qualify. But I think the fact that it uses and it counsels against a per se isolation of one of the three to say, well, that's it, you got the date, you're in. And I think that may be some helpful guidance that I hope and suspect the commission could agree on. That's not to say that including the date with some other information, maybe not even the location of the polling place and the hours, but combined with other factors might not be relevant in the determination as to whether communications GOTV. I think it would be relevant, but it's just the date alone won't do it. Take something else. And some of the part of the something else, obviously, would be the two specific examples there. Second, on the individualized means, I think that goes not only to the form of the communication, but to the content. And that is to say that something that is... it's obvious that a letter could be individualized in some context or some ways, or it could be a mass communication than others, and I agree that our representations of the court are relevant in guiding our interpretations that way. But if you're sending the same letter to everyone, I think that is very much less likely to be individualized, whereas if you're varying the text of the letter, to go back to our factors, saying your polling place is here, here are directions, then not only do you have the factors, but you have the other element, which is the assistance. And so the providing directions and location of a polling place gets you over into assistance, which is one of the things I see missing in these communications. Though I do agree that the county link is the thing that sort of brings it closest. And I'm aware of other efforts and devices that very directly take voters to programs or places that will identify their polling place and give them directions and so on like that. And something very directly focused on that, I think, would constitute get-out-the-vote effort and assistance in voting. I also think the timing is a factor, and this is maybe something important for the commission to agree on collectively if it can, and that is having dropped the 72-hour piece of our example. I still think it's simply a matter of sense about what get out the vote is, that the proximity to the election is one of the factors. And what we've removed is the 72 hours being sort of especially relevant. But something that is very close to the election the day before is much more likely to be get out the vote than something 2 weeks before, much less something a month before. I pulled out some research, a book by Donald Green and Alan Gerber on get out the vote, published by the Brookings Institution. And their assessment, which was a pretty rigorous academic assessment, is that the effects run out for about a week. That's not in the reg. I'm not suggesting that we take a week to replace 72 hours, but I am suggesting that there's substantial research out there that shows things have to be pretty close to the election to have measurable effects. I note also they have some dollar figures on effectiveness of mail and other means, and they note robocalls, no detectable effect. So, unfortunately, we can't use the fact that this is not likely to work as a legal category as to how it's going to be treated. But I do note that. And then I think Commissioner Walther brought up an important point about what's the effect here. And while I agree certainly that the court and the legislation itself was looking at effects of activity and how they interacted, I don't think we can take that too far. Because again, there are things that are not within the purview of the Act. And I think one could easily make a case that promoting support for Bob Foster for mayor is going to increase the turnout of Democratic voters at the poll and therefore affect the federal election in some way if the federal election is held on the same date. And it's very clear that there are things that the L.A. County Party or the Long Beach organization is permitted to do that wouldn't be FEA that will increase support for their mayoral candidate or other relevant candidates and have some effect. And so as we start to follow out the effect of the effect of the effect, circumvention to the circumvention, at some point we've got to draw a limit to it, and so while I think again that's a relevant factor, I don't think we can simply go out and everything that may vaguely have an effect on a federal election regulate it for that reason, but rather be bound by the statute in the ways that I've described.
Thank you, Commissioner Mason. Further discussion? Commissioner Von Spakovsky.
Well, I agree with a lot of the remarks here, particularly, and I won't go over this again, that this to me is not get-out-the-vote activity. It doesn't have the kind of personal assistance that we talk about. And this is points that we made very clear in the E&J we issued in 2002 and the one we just issued 3 months ago. And, many of the regulations we issue are very esoteric, and for the most part they have impact on the professional regulated community in Washington, the presidential campaigns, the national parties. I hope everyone who's sitting in this room recognizes themselves in that description. But this is an AO that's very different, because it really affects grassroots levels, grassroots activities of local parties. And we are presented here with the potential of federalizing what is really local activity. And neither the statute nor the regulations nor the legislative history nor the Shays litigation mandate that we do this, and I don't think we should. It's very important to go to what the LA party wants to do. We have the scripts. They're going to say the election day is June 6th. They're going to say which party they're endorsing for the municipal election, and they ask you to vote for that candidate. Now, I have here a couple of pages from the brief that this agency filed in the McConnell case, where the constitutionality of this statute was being contested. And in fact, one of the key issues brought up by the plaintiffs was its potentially overbroad nature and the fact that it would federalize local activities. And on page 31 of that brief, and I hate to read something very long, but I think it's important to put in the record, quote, similarly, plaintiff's contention that a state party committee could not use soft money to pay for the printing and mailing of a flyer that reads, quote, vote Republican, John Smith for dog catcher on November 6th is entirely incorrect. Well, all you have to do is change that to vote Democratic Bob Foster for mayor on June 6th, not November 6th. And in our brief, we say the printing and mailing of the flyer would not be GOTV activity because it is not individualized, particularly if it is a mass mailing of over 500 pieces. It is also not generic campaign activity because it mentions a specific state candidate. And because it only mentions a state candidate, it is not the type of communication that constitutes federal election activity under 2 U.S.C. 431. Now, I think it would be manifestly unfair, inconsistent, and quite frankly, I've been a lawyer for more than two decades, and I think it borders on unethical, for us to take a position in a brief in which the constitutionality of this statute is being contested, and then for us to take the exact opposite opinion once the court has found it constitutional based on basically what is our assurances on how we would intend to regulate this. And we would be saying that this exact example, it's almost, the words are almost exactly the same, would now suddenly be federally regulated when we assured the court it was not. Now, I think there's a second alternative that has not been mentioned here by anyone. It hasn't been mentioned by any of the commenters. And I think that's because no one actually went to Long Beach to get details of the exact election. Well, I have a copy of the ballot here for the municipal ballot. And it has candidates on it for mayor, it has candidates on it for city council, and it has candidates on it for the local school board. There is no federal candidate on this ballot. There is a separate ballot, completely separate ballot, which has the state, county, and federal candidates on it. Now, why is that important? Well, it's important because if you go to the statute, BCRA itself, not our regulations, but BCRA, defines federal election activity to include, quote, voter identification, get-out-the-vote activity, or generic campaign activity conducted in connection with an election in which a candidate for federal office appears on the ballot. There is no federal candidate on the municipal ballot, which is a nonpartisan ballot. If you go to the website for Long Beach, we discover that they already had their nonpartisan primary in April. It coincides that they're having this runoff general election at the same time as the state primary. And on their website it says, quote, on Tuesday, June 6, residents will vote at one polling place on two different ballots, one for city candidates and one for state and county candidates and issues. Voters will visit two sign-in tables at the same polling place and will use two different voting systems to cast their ballots. So we have entirely separate ballots, and we have a statute that is plain and unambiguous. The fact that these two elections are on the same day and that our regulations didn't take this into account is frankly irrelevant, because it's pretty basic precept of agency law that a federal agency cannot make unlawful conduct which is specifically not prohibited by the statute, which the statute says is lawful. We don't have the power to do that. So I don't think this is GOTV. I also don't think it fits the definition of the statute, and I don't think that we can simply ignore the statutory language because it would be inconvenient for the policy outcome that wants to be achieved. So I intend to vote against the advisory opinion that's been drafted by the Office of General Counsel. Thanks.
Thank you, Commissioner. I particularly appreciate your comments about the McConnell litigation and the representations were made there, because I think those representations were a very good faith and accurate reading of our regulations, namely the individualized means component. And you quoted from some of the commenters that discussed the fact that direct mail mass mailings would not be an individualized means, would not be GOTV for that basis. And as I indicated in my opening remarks, I agree with that position. So I appreciate you highlighting that, because I think the representations that were made to the McConnell courts were well grounded in the regulations that we issued. Further discussion. Commissioner Walther.
Sure, just a couple of comments. I share that concern about the brief. That certainly is upsetting in the sense that we find ourselves to have made those kind of statements earlier, and I understand from not having been there that those were made by counsel without necessarily prior imprimatur of commission decision on how to interpret that those regulations. So we find ourselves trying to deal with what we consider to be the law that was passed and the policies that were basically enunciated in the law and interpreted by the court. I come down differently, as has the Office of General Counsel, on whether or not we're bound by that. I'm not sure how the rest of the commissioners feel about it. I'm not pleased about the fact that that was done, but nevertheless, I feel that given the circumstances of the facts of this case, it has the direct effect of influencing the election. And the law itself really intended to, in certain cases, cover state campaigns when there was a federal election. And in this particular case, I think it has that effect. I would note that we did pass the interim rule that expires on September 1st of 2007, in which we clearly pointed out that federal election activity did not occur on a different date. If there was a municipal candidate election, for example, and I was one of the four that voted in favor, it was a 4-2 vote. So in that case, I think, clearly, we can carve a reliable exception. Here, I do see it differently.
Thank you, Commissioner. Commissioner Weintraub.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll try not to repeat everything that's been said before. For me, there are a few things that are persuasive here. First of all, I want to thank all the commenters. When we do a push to get a fast AO out, that means you guys have to hustle too, and you did, and it was very helpful. It was very informative. Actually, I don't know if I should thank you because it looked a lot simpler before we got the comments in. But the comments were persuasive, I think, in a lot of ways. On the subject of the brief, I am also troubled by that potential inconsistency. I don't think we are legally bound by it. I probably wouldn't go so far as Commissioner Von Spakovsky. I don't think it would be unethical if we did something different. I think we could change our minds. But I do think that it would diminish our credibility as an agency when, you know, we go out and make one representation to the court in a fact pattern that I agree looks pretty darn similar to what we've got in front of us, and then we turn around when somebody asks us in a particular circumstance and say, oops, that was then, this is now, changed our mind. I think it undermines our credibility. It doesn't make us look very good, and I would prefer that we not do it. So it's not the determining factor for me, but it does weigh on me. I also am not terribly persuaded by the question of the issue of the separate ballots. I think, you know, ballots are often multi-page events, and, you know, if it's on this page versus that page, or you have to walk across the room to vote, that doesn't do it for me. But what does do it for me is the combination of the factors of the facts of this specific case. And like several of my colleagues, I'm uncomfortable that we can't give you a nice, simple rule that you could go out and say, okay, now we know what to do in every single other circumstance. Because this is an AO. AOs are fact-dependent, and it is the facts of this AO that persuade me that we probably should not adopt the staff draft, particularly the fact that when I try and interpret what the commission might have meant when it first adopted the words individualized means, and I look at robocalls and mass mailings going to every registered Democrat, it doesn't feel very individualized to me. If I were on the receiving end of that, I would not feel that I had been individually contacted. I completely agree with the scientific study that robocalls are ineffective. I always delete them or hang up on them.
Calling.
And they keep calling anyway. I don't understand. And in fact, you know, if you sent one of those calls to my house, you might just as well, my 14-year-old daughter might pick up the phone, and she's not a registered voter, and she might be very interested in hearing what the robocall had to say, but it's certainly not individualized in that you don't know who you're going to get. I combine that with the fact that the only fact that seems to trip this over into the GOTV area is the mentioning of the date. And I agree with Commissioner Mason that the date alone doesn't do it for me. I've been trying to figure out whether Congress would have actually intended this result, that a state or local party committee making an express advocacy communication on behalf of a specifically identified state or local candidate with no generic appeal and no, you know, vote for all Democrats, the Democratic Party needs you, no mention of any federal candidate, not even a mention of an issue that's associated with a Democrat, with another federal candidate, nothing there except what's relevant to this very local race. And all you've got is the date of the election in there. You know, if it was the date, the time, the polling place, maybe. But in this case, where all we're talking about is the date, I don't think that's enough. And I think that if we did adopt the staff draft, the result of that would be that basically all state and local party communications that mention the date of an election would have to be paid for with federal funds or a mix of federal funds and Levin funds. And mentioning the date of the election is a fairly common practice. I mean, it's sort of ubiquitous on any kind of information that the state and local parties put out. Did Congress mean to federalize that? Unfortunately, I don't know the answer. I wish I did. I wish that amongst the comments that we had received, we had gotten some from members of Congress, but we didn't, so we'll have to muddle along on our own. So, you know, the bottom line for me is that based on the very specific facts of this case, I think this isn't GOTV. But, you know, there might well be another case where the facts were different, where I might say, well, that's facts are different, that's a different answer.
Thank you, Commissioner Weintraub. And a couple follow-up points. I want to emphasize again that I think that the representations made to the McConnell Court are a natural reading of the regulation and a natural outgrowth of what we did. And so I'm very comfortable with the representations that were made there. And it may very well be that the action we take today is consistent with that at some level. So I want to emphasize that because it's important for me in terms of what we're doing here. But the other thing is I think depending upon how this plays out, we may actually have some concrete guidance to state and local parties in some important respects. I mean, as I hear my colleagues, consensus is emerging that merely indicating the date of an election alone is not enough to trigger a GOTV finding. And I think Commissioner Mason is correct that if you have all three elements of the regulation, namely indicating the date of the election, the times when polling places are open, and the location of particular polling places, that qualifies for GOTV. I think we also may have some broad consensus that form letters, wrote form letters through direct mail does not constitute individualized means, as opposed to letters that are tailored to particular voters and indicate specific information. I'm certainly very comfortable with that kind of guidance. And I also hear a number of my colleagues indicating that proximity to an election is relevant to whether a communication is GOTV, and I agree. And that we did make an effort in the first round of regulations to set an example of that, namely the 72-hour example, I think decided to remove that from the regulations mainly because it caused some confusion at certain levels, as if that were some sort of mandatory window, that unless you were within 72 hours, no communication could ever be GOTV, which was never the intention of the agency. But I am hearing a number of my colleagues say that proximity to the election does remain relevant to the analysis, and namely that communications that are made further away from the election are less likely to be GOTV, and I agree. And I think the converse is also true. Communications that are made closer to an election are more likely to be GOTV. So I'm pleased because I think there's a number of important elements here can form the basis for some practical guidance. And I have to be the first to concede that these issues are a case of first impression. I don't believe we've ever fleshed out what the individualized means element means or what type of communications based on their content are GOTV. We just have never had an occasion to do that. So even if we're not able to tackle every single aspect of these issues, I think we may be in a position to provide some positive guidance in a number of these areas. And I do think an important point is made that this is state and local party activity, and the sensitivity about not federalizing this range of activity unless necessary to implement the statute, I do think that's an important policy concern, and I think that that is animating many of the views. And I do appreciate the vice chairman's emphasis on the fact that at bottom, this communication is about electing a local candidate. There's no mention of federal candidates, so there's definitely no promoting or attacking a federal candidate. I think Commissioner Weintraub is absolutely right. There's no discussion of issues associated with a federal candidate. This is about electing a guy, the mayor of Long Beach, and that is not what Congress sought to federalize. In the statute and in the regulations either. So I agree with many of the comments that my colleagues have shared about these issues. Commissioner Weintraub.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just want to make a comment on one thing that you said about form letters. I wouldn't want people to walk away from this with the impression that mail would have to be, you know, dear Ellen Weintraub, living at this address, mother of three children, with your children attending the following schools. I mean, that's not the level of individualization that would be required in my view anyway. And I think that a form letter here, a form letter that's just dear Democratic voter, isn't enough for me. But if it were, if there was, I think Commissioner Mason mentioned, if this was in combination with some more sophisticated voter ID, you know, we've already determined that you are one of Bob Foster's strongest supporters, and therefore we're going to send you the form letter right before the election, or give you the robocall right before the election, because we know that if we can get you out to vote, we know who you're going to vote for. That would be a different fact pattern. So I wouldn't want my own view to be misconstrued as saying form letters are never going to trigger the GOTV. I think there are circumstances in which they could, but this isn't it.
I appreciate that. And under my view, a form letter can never be GOTV. I just want to note that for the record. Commissioner Walfer. Oh, I'm sorry. Was someone else seeking?
No, I would simply say that I think we've discussed it fully. I feel we find ourselves in some real uncharted waters. I would welcome some defined rulemaking in this area, and I think then maybe even more guidance could be given, because here we still have a lot of vagueness in what, even from today's decision, left out there.
Well, Commissioner, we can do FEA round three. We did one in 2002, and we just it's a work in progress.
Maybe
Commissioner Weintraub.
Maybe they could do that next year, like sometime after April 30th.
An 07-08 priority, right. Further discussion on these issues. Commissioner Mace.
I think we may be in a position where the requester, though they won't have a letter, will have a fair assurance of how they can carry out this activity over the next 10 days or whatever it is before the election. It may have already started. So I'd like to suggest that the best way to proceed might be to ask counsel to redraft based on the discussion at the table. I'm hoping that they've got enough of consensus about the factors that need to be addressed and how far they can go in each. I don't think we need to settle, for instance, the can a form letter ever be GOTV.
I'd be fine if we settled that, by the way.
I know at least one member would. But,
and I'll issue a concurring opinion of that, if I, but that's okay.
But, I preparatory to a motion, want to see if counsel feels like they have enough information from the discussion to be able to draw up a response that not only would answer the particular question, but in these areas such as the date alone is not enough, to put in some factors that would provide useful guidance as well.
Mr. Norton.
I don't think we'd have any difficulty doing that.
And we have had a number of advisory opinions where we are able to have a motion along those lines and then handle it on tally. I think we did that with the Brooks advisory opinion. So I think, Commissioner Mason, you make a good point. We can plan to do that. Would you like to offer a motion?
I would, Mr. Chairman. I would move that we conclude that the mailings at issue do not constitute get-out-the-vote activity, and instruct the Office of General Counsel to provide an opinion based on the discussion at the table to circulate for approval on a tally vote.
Mr. Vice Chairman?
If I could note, the motion only covered the mailings. The activity at issue included both phones, so maybe it's the activity.
Mailings and the phones. And the phones, correct.
Christian Mason has moved to redraft an advisory opinion concluding that the communications at issue, the mailings and telephone call, do not constitute GOTV, and to provide a rationale consistent with the viewpoints articulated here at the table. Discussion on Commissioner Mason's motion. Hearing none, I'll call the question. All those in favor say aye. Aye. All opposed?
Nay.
Motion carries by a vote of 5-1 with Commissioner Walther dissenting. I believe that concludes our business for this special session. Mr. Costa, any administrative matters to bring to our attention?
No, Mr. Chairman.
Hearing none, this meeting is adjourned.